Aren't you interested in learning breakthrough wealth building strategies, such as how to flip a home in less than 2 weeks using other people's money with no real estate license, or how to build a low-cost home-based business? You can discover how to take passive income from any source and invest it into real estate, stocks, or business to become financially independent investing in any market with Residual Roads Business Institute. Collaborate with Andre and other Residual Roads advisors to create a free action plan and start implementing strategies today. Go to www.residualroads.com or email info@residualroads.com. Welcome to the Investing Uncensored podcast. You've been searching for different ways to become financially independent or generate passive income to live out your life's purpose as you've seen others do it, but need insight on how. Well, get excited because here you'll discover the tips and resources to fulfill that need. Andre Stewart has spent more than a decade successfully making it happen for himself and others. This is the Investing Uncensored podcast. And now here's your host, Andre Stewart.
Welcome to another episode of Investing Uncensored. I'm your host, Andre Stewart. And today I'm going to be interviewing Mel Stupard. He's a top performing real estate agent based out of Augusta, Georgia. He's been doing real estate for, I don't know, maybe 8 years now. And you might have heard me reference him or one of my friends that I started doing real estate with on one of my podcasts, and it was him. So he was the person that got his license, and I was the person that decided to just not get my license and get into real estate investing. It's probably one of the best ideas that we had. So Mel, if you can, man, I know I've had you on here before, but you know, just let everybody know what you've been up to for the past, I think it's been 2 years since I had you on. So let everybody know what you're working on, how you decided to pivot. You're in investing now. You're not doing just regular real estate sales. Go ahead, man. Let them know.
Hey, Andre. Good. Glad to be here, man. It's been a while. Yeah. We should do this more often. But yeah, a lot has changed since the last time we was on the podcast. Not so much as far as what the objective was, but just, you know, the market, you know, COVID, market shutting down. So you definitely have to learn how to pivot. And that's one thing that I've been doing since we last time we talked. So I've just been working more heavily with investors because, I mean, the market is shifting. It's becoming more of an investor-friendly market. And because of the rising interest rates and the low inventory, makes it a really exciting and attractive market for investors. We've seen historical numbers in the past, year or so? So, yeah, it's been really exciting. And that's pretty much what I've been working on as far as just finding more lead sources, talking to a lot more people about strategy and what they want to do as far as their buy box and whatnot. So
you also just became but you started doing REO properties. That's going to be a big thing, man. I think 7 months ago when you first started doing it, I was like, you asked me, was this going to be a good move? And I'm like, yeah, it's going to be a good move because you can kind of, we talked about what was going on in the economy. So elaborate a little bit more on, you know, you becoming an REO agent and what have you seen as far as REO properties coming to the market?
Yeah. So REO, that's something I always was interested in. I was always intrigued by REOs because being an investor friend and realtor, you know, we always are targeting off-market properties, right? And then you see these properties that you drive by and they abandoned, the grass is growing up, and you look them up and you say they're owned by hedge funds and sometimes they're owned by the bank, and you're trying to figure out how can you get access to these properties. And one of the hurdles that we always discussed was getting in contact with asset managers. So in our travels, I think we was doing a flip here in Augusta, and I was doing a BPO. Well, another agent was doing a BPO. She was out of California. So I asked the agent, how does she get BPOs to a brokerage? Her brokerage is one of the biggest servicers, owned by one of the biggest servicers in the country, which is Carrington Mortgage. And I immediately got on the phone with them. We discussed REOs. The Carrington Mortgage is really big on getting REOs because they service a lot of loans. So that's how I got in my hands on these. I just recently got two REOs here. And working with asset managers and REOs is a difficult and but fun process, because you learn a lot about these properties that do go to foreclosure. And that's one thing that me and you, Audrey, was always discussing, was how to stop these properties from going to foreclosure. Because once they go through the foreclosure, it's a whole conveyor belt of hands that actually have to touch these properties before they actually release back on the market. And even when they release back on the market as an REO agent, there's still a long process before you actually acquire these properties, believe it or not. And the bank is completely unattached. They don't have any emotions as far as the condition of the property, where it is. They pretty much rely on us as agents as be the eyes and the ears. We take pictures, we give them advice. But at the end of the day, they have their own bottom, rock bottom number that they want to have for the property. And they will let the property sit for a year or two, recycling these properties back off the market, back on the market, back off the market, back on the market, until they get their number. And they have a reserve that they have to meet, because the bank, most of the services have clients that they have to answer to. And these clients have a number that they want to get for these properties. So REO properties are a good investment, but you have to play by the rules of the bank at the end of the day. They're not a regular seller. And I have to explain that to my investors. They don't have any emotions and they're not really motivated. So either you give them that number or you can play the waiting game. And most of the time, the bank is going to win.
That's funny, because I previously on a podcast like I did a while back, I talked about, you remember during the last recession in the 08 collapse, there was like a ton of REO properties. There was a ton of signs in the yards. That's a huge indication of, you know, obviously the economy not doing well. So we talked about you going to an REO conference in Dallas. I think it was last week. What have you seen, though? What have you seen as far as the uptick in REO properties, or what have you heard from other agents about the uptick in REO properties? Because like I mentioned before on that podcast, I said, if you're seeing a bunch of properties pop up in your neighborhood that are bank owned or they say REO, there's a high likelihood that there are other neighborhoods in America and all across the world that are having that same issue, which is a very clear indication that the housing market and that the economy is not doing well. So, you know, you're on the inside. What can you tell us about the uptick in REO properties?
Well, the CMS conference in Dallas is pretty much a conference where investors, asset managers, realtors, and they all come together and network. It's pretty much a networking event. You get an opportunity to meet a lot of asset managers face to face. And a lot of these asset managers already have clients, I mean, are realtors that they work with for. So it's a long-term game in getting in good with an asset manager. You know, sometimes you can get lucky. You may get one that say, hey, look, I'll try you out and see how you do. But a lot of times, if it's not broke, it's why fix it to them. So these asset managers do have an obligation to their clients, though. They have to move these properties. And the foreclosure moratorium is officially over. So that means that there will be an influx of properties that the bank has to foreclose on. And because of COVID and the moratorium, they couldn't foreclose on them. There was a process that the properties that were in forbearance, they had to go through. And they had to get these homeowners an opportunity to redeem these properties, either through loan modification, you know, cash for keys. And they were sitting on these properties, but the moratorium on foreclosures will be ending, I believe. Is it this month? I still have to check.
It ended September 30th. So it ended a couple of days ago. But like, have you seen an uptick? Have you seen more? Like, you know, I'm curious. We all want to know.
I have seen an uptick, a lot more than I have seen in the past year. So just recently, I think, just looking at just the newspaper, which is the best place to find these pre-foreclosures. Once you start seeing double-digit numbers, which I haven't seen in a while, posted to the newspapers, I know that they're finally starting to, the banks are starting to cycle through the people who they just know not going to be responding. Some of these people have passed away, unfortunately. Some of them have just moved on and they just abandoned these properties. they don't find another job and they move to another city. So
real quick, how do you know that they moved to another city? You know what I mean? Like, what metrics or what kind of tool do you use to know when someone has moved? Like, how do you know? Like, what list do you go to and say, you know what? This person hasn't been here in 5-6 months. This is the vacant house.
This is all internal data that I acquire because, I mean, once I do my spreadsheet and I'm calling these pre-foreclosures, like this morning, I cold call every day from 8 to 11. And I reached out to I was looking at this pre-foreclosure that's going to foreclose on November 1st. After doing my research, you look up the name, the person passed away. So the property is obviously, if it hasn't been through probate, then it's going to be foreclosed on. Last week, you know, full cold calling, pre-foreclosures. I think we discussed a property where the guy was in New York. He didn't even want to have anything to do with the property. He said, I could care less about the property. It's behind me. Let it go back to the
bank. Well, how do you find this guy? Like cold calling, what kind of list are you looking at? Water bill list or like what list are you looking at to find these people?
So I have several. You can go, the best place to find pre-foreclosures at the end of the day is go straight to the horse's mouth, which is the newspaper. Here in Georgia, which is Georgia is a non-judicial state. So you don't get the title to your property. And that means that the bank can foreclose on your property by posting a notice of foreclosure 30 days in advance. They can legally foreclose on your property. So Georgia is 30 days, you're gone. You know, unlike on, you know, judicial states, maybe like South Carolina or Florida, where you actually have to deed, they have to sue you in order to, you know, foreclose on your property and get the deed back because technically you own the property. But Georgia is a title state. So they have to put in a newspaper in Georgia. Once you go to the newspaper, you can pull that list. You want to dissect that list, of course, and pull it because there's a lot of legal jargon that you have to read through to find the name, how much they owe, the person who was last on the title. Then you cross-reference that. As a realtor, we have a database called CRS that we can look up any property or we can type in a name and we can verify that person owned the property. Then we can look at the history and see if the last note on the property. Has it been in foreclosure? Has it ever been in foreclosure? If it is in foreclosure, there's a foreclosure date and there's an amount. So that's pretty much one way of finding pre-foreclosures, just going straight to the newspaper and finding them. Another way, you can go to different websites. You can go to Zillow, auction.com, zone.com. They're going to post their pre-foreclosures on there, their forbearance notes. I mean, there is a ton of different sites that you can go to that are free that you can find leads and potentially be able to call and help some of these clients out because a lot of them do need help.
Have you ever thought to yourself, I wish I could get into real estate investing? You can change this as quickly or as slowly as you want to now. Imagine yourself networking and making new connections in real estate globally, or buying an investment property in a market or country that fits your needs. People do. They know what I'm talking about. And now you can too with InvestFAR. Connect and join the network. Remote investing made safe and easy.
You mentioned, you know, public sites, but like we obviously have used water bill in the past. If you can explain why we have used a water bill in the past, because you can go anywhere and tell them how you get the water bill. You can use the water bill in any state. Explain to them why people would use a water bill to determine on outreach to this particular property owner.
So the water bill is a great way to generate vacant properties. Because if you think about it, you can live without electricity. You can light candles. You can run a generator. You maybe not need heat and air. You can open up windows. But you can't really live without water in the house. Your toilets, your shower, you know, your sink as a daily washing. It's kind of hard to get that amount of water to live in the house. So any house that hasn't had water in the past 6 months, nine times out of 10, 99.9% of the time, the house is vacant. Whether the house is, you know, but you definitely have to do your homework once you pull that list, because the house could have been being renovated. It could be new construction. But most of the time, it's just vacant. It's abandoned properties. So by you reaching out to your county clerk and ask him, say, hey, look, your water, your utilities department, and you simply put in a request. I would like to get a list of properties that hasn't had water in the past 6 months or the past year or the past 2 years. And they'll happily provide the information to you.
And information is the current address or the address of the owner. If he moved somewhere, what kind of information do they generally give?
They just give you the property address.
Oh, and so you have to skip trace to get the other information.
Yeah, you skip trace it. And like I said, you know, as a realtor, you have CRS data, so you can definitely check and see who was the last owner.
But what about people that aren't realtors, though? You know, most of the people that are listening aren't realtors. So what other website can they go to? I mean, I use batch.com and it's been pretty accurate. So what is another skip trace that you use besides batch.com?
I use batch skip tracing. I also use, you can use PropStream. PropStream have a skip tracing source. MyPlus Leads, which is really good. They have a skip tracing. And, you know, you basically just plug it into the CSV the same way. First name, last name. You leave that blank. You put address, city, state, zip. And it would bring back a search. Even if you put John Doe into your CSV and you name all of your properties John Doe, it will still pull back, 9 times out of 10, it will still pull back the correct information of who owns that property, phone number, email address.
Yeah, that's good, man. I mean, that's what I think you guys should be doing as well. I mean, that's what we do. We use PropStream. I use PropStream and I use batch.com. And I'm just kind of asking Mel to give you guys his opinion of what he's using from a different perspective versus hearing it from me all the time. And you can hear what other people are doing as well. But moving along, I mean, again, guys, that's the method that I would be doing, because as you can see, the economy is not getting any better. And like he's explained to you this, you know, from an agent perspective, they see the uptick in the REO properties. And especially with him being an REO agent, he's on the front line and he gets it before anyone else does. That's the benefit of being an REO agent, is because you're going to get this property before any other agent is. So he knows what's going on. That's kind of like a great way to be the ear to the streets before it hits anybody else. So with that being said, what do you guys think as far as agents? What do you guys think about this mortgage loan that's just for minority borrowers? What's your thoughts on that?
I love it. Man, I love it. They kind of rolled out a couple of products that were kind of sort of like that in this area. It was only for minority areas that was above 54%. But I'm glad to see big banks jump in there and do it, because it's needed. I mean, they kind of picked a fine time to do it because there's low inventory. So that just creates less inventory. But it also helps those low income areas that need to be revitalized. And if you want to stay in an area that's kind of, like you said, needs to have a little bit more attraction to it, that's what these loans are designed for.
I'm kind of up in the air on it, man. They're obviously testing it out in certain markets. I think it's a good thing, but I think it's misleading when they post information about that, because they don't give the underlying reason, which is they're obviously trying to, you know, stimulate the economy by doing mortgages. But on the flip side is that they're giving these properties, or I'm sorry, they're giving these loans to people that can buy properties in underserved communities, but we're in a recession. And so they're not putting any money down. So if they can get a property without putting any money up front, and we're heading into a recession, the likelihood of the people in these communities losing their job is probably a lot higher than, you know, someone in a different demographic, just because the service industry gets hit and they're trying to provide loans for underserved communities. The majority of the people that are in underserved communities are working service jobs, and the service sector gets hit first. So they're going to end up turning around and possibly being able to foreclose on these properties. So I think it could be good and bad at the same time. So it's just hopefully they do real good due diligence on the people that they decide to give the loans to. And I don't think it should be really specific to certain communities, man. Like, there's people in the middle class, which is getting eroded, who should still be able to take advantage of this loan as a minority borrower. I don't think it should just be, like, I'm in LA. I don't think it should just be someone in Compton. I think it could be someone in Culver City. I think it could be someone in different areas who are also in the middle class who are also just don't have it like that as well. But I think it's a good program. But I just hope that it's not some wool over a person's eyes to what they're trying to do as far as getting money into the economy and coming back later and foreclosing on these houses, which would just be unfortunate. But you know how I think, like, if you don't have any skin in the game, and that's why banks really don't like to lend 100% loans because a person doesn't have skin in the game. It's like when you give your kid a lot of stuff without making them work for it, they tend to not have an appreciation for it and they just throw it by the wayside. You know what I mean? So I'm just hoping that this new program, you know how they give out money and things like that without having stipulations? I just hope they do it better than some of the programs they've done in the past. You know what I mean? So what do you think about that?
I think you do have a point. You know, it can be risky, but on another note, I think, you know, high risk, high reward. The thing about these loans is, if I'm correct about these loans, that they're not adjustable rate mortgages. And the thing about the adjustable rate mortgages, what happened to us back in 2000, was that those subprime loans, a lot of those subprime loans were adjustable rate mortgages. So they had these balloon rates, these balloons that would hit them 5-1, 7-1 ARMs. Those are the things that you can't prepare for, especially if you don't have a good budget. You're not starting off with a solid foundation. But most of these loans, if I'm correct, is 30-year loans. And they're buying them at a time where interest rates are still historically low. And
I don't know, man, not to cut you off, but what I'm saying is housing prices are already super inflated. And then you have high interest rates. So, like, even if you were to give it to someone, I'm going to use South Central as an example, a house in South Central costs like $800,000, even $600,000. And if you give it to them at a 6 or 7% interest rate, that's still going to be astronomically high. I'm a timing person. Why wouldn't you release a program like this 5 years ago? Why would you release it in a time where housing prices are super inflated and there's high interest and you're going to do it without any money down? You know what I mean? So it's still going to be risky to the person that is trying to get that property, in my opinion.
Yeah. I mean, it is market specific. I mean, if you're in a market like you said, South Central, where they don't have any new infrastructure going on and everything is pretty much the same. Yeah, that's a bad place to start because the housing market went up because there was low inventory. So now when things start to level off, they're going to be underwater on their property.
Exactly.
So that could come back to bite. Another thing is that when things level off, it may not level off as much. It may not take a dip as everybody may think. Because it's going to take some time to do that. So say maybe 5-10 years down the line, if they continue to pay off their mortgage, which if you can rent, you can buy. That's always my rule of thumb. If you can rent, you're going to live in a house somewhere. If you can rent, then you can buy. Then it's always good to at least have that home. And 10 years down the line, you don't pay your mortgage down where even if the market level off enough, you'll be breaking even if you turn around and try to sell that property.
Yeah. I mean, you want to be able to obviously make money on any home transaction. So what do you know, we're coming toward the end. What do you think people should know about investing in real estate right now?
I think people should know their numbers. I think they definitely should get with a good lender before, like an investor. They definitely should read the book, Real Estate Investing Diet. They definitely should pick that book up because that's going to teach you a lot of what pitfalls to look for, how to hire the contractor, you know, where to look and definitely how to do your numbers because like you said, it's market specific. You got to know your market. You got to know your numbers. You got to have more than one exit strategy in case you get into hot water and you need to get out. You want to get with a good realtor who can help you navigate those waters just in case. Investment-friendly realtor, like myself.
I didn't tell him to plug the book, by the way. That's just something he did because I'm assuming he read the book. So he's given some good advice to you guys. One thing I will say is that he is a good agent, man. He can find properties. That's one of the things that is really hard to find when it comes to real estate agents. Most of them typically don't know how to find really good investment properties, but this man has notoriously found real good deals over the past 5 or 6 years. And, you know, it could be attributed to how we came in as investors, then he became an agent, or he could just have an eye for real estate investing. You know, he's just been doing it for a while. So one other question I'll ask, man, before we go, give me 3 to 5 books on what you would recommend people to read, you know, just for, you know, not even real estate. What are your top 3 or 5 books that you would recommend?
3 to 5 books. The Bible, for one. Definitely should read the Bible. That's definitely going to put you in a higher state of mind. Another book is Thou Shalt Prosper by Rabbi Daniel Lappin. That's a really good book. It teaches you about money. It teaches you about investing. And it's overall a good book. Hustle Harder, Hustle Smarter by Curtis 50 Cent Jackson.
Yeah, I heard really, that was a good book too. I heard that was a good book. Some guy told me in Columbia it was a good book.
Yeah. Think and Grow Rich by Napoleon Hill. That's going to definitely put you in a great mindset. And The E-Myth.
Yeah, it's your favorite book, bro. You always recommend The E-Myth.
The E-Myth by Michael Turner. Because you got to learn to delegate.
That's so funny. Man, well, I wanted to bring you on, man. You're on the front lines, and it's been a while since I had you on. But like he's still bringing investors to the table. He's still finding properties. He found a property the other day that was $125,000 turnkey. He's giving it to an investor. So there's still deals to be made, or there's still deals to buy. Right now, it's just very market specific. And I think Augusta, where he is, and other parts of the Southeast are still good places to buy because the cost of those properties are still relatively cheap versus the national average, which is like $375,000. It was around $410,000, but that's came down because prices are coming down. But guys, Phil, think about investing in real estate. Just pick out the markets that you think are working for you. We're looking at Phoenix. Phoenix is in a huge decline. We're looking at Vegas. Vegas is in a decline. So there's a lot of areas that were, you know, had these large run-ups. But just know that when you buy these properties in those areas, there's still a likelihood that their prices are going to come down, but there's still good opportunities to buy. And like I said, in the Southeast, these prices are still low and they're still also appreciating in value. So Mel, give people the best way to find you if they want to find properties in the Southeast so they can, you know, still invest and get properties that are appreciating that are not declining in value.
Well, you can definitely email me at Stupard, that's STUPPARD group. STUPPARD group at gmail.com. Or you can go to villahome.com/mel.stupard. You can definitely find me on my website there. Or you can give me a call. You know, you can reach out to me. My number is 706-726-7266. I'm always usually available. If not, then you can text message me and I'll get back to you as soon as possible.
Well, guys, thank you guys for listening, and I hope you found some value in what we brought today and what Mel has shared. Now I'll see you guys on the next episode. Take care.
Aren't you ready to start a business or grow your real estate investing portfolio? If you answered yes, allow Andre and the expert advisors at the Residual Roads Business Institute to fast track and put you on a path to full-time investing. The greatest transfer of wealth in our lifetime is occurring over the next few years, and you can take advantage if you know what to look for. In order to be successful at real estate investing, you need to learn how to leverage your current resources to generate quick money, big money, and retirement money. Let Residual Roads advisors craft a plan to get you through these phases using little or no money in 6 months or less. Don't wait for a job. Create one for yourself and others.
Go to residualroads.com. For mentorship and for our free course, go to residualroads.thinkific.com.